Welcome to the Capital Connection, a weekly program questioning New York State leaders on a variety of issues. Your host is Dr. Alan Chartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Distribution for the Capital Connection is made possible with the help of New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us this week is Larry Sharp, the Libertarian candidate for governor. Larry Sharp describes himself as a businessman who started a trucking business and sold a successful distribution company, a strategic consultant for thought leaders in government, finance, law, technology, media, and healthcare, a teacher and guest instructor who taught English management and business at universities such as Yale, Columbia, and John Jay College. And a native New Yorker, Marine Corps veteran, husband to Georgia, and father of two daughters, Barbara and Josephine. Welcome, Larry Sharp.
How are you doing? I'm glad to be here.
Okay, so Larry, let me ask you first of all. You're the Libertarian candidate running for governor. So I need to know.
Both true, yes.
I got a PhD in political science. I taught at John Jay, too.
I love it.
But I'm not exactly sure what a Libertarian is. So maybe you can tell us.
Libertarian is someone who believes that you should be as conservative or as liberal as you want to be, as long as you are not trying to force yourself on others. We understand that law is a very serious thing, that at the end of almost every law is a guy or a gal with a gun who's going to put you in a cage, and if you don't want to go in that cage, that person's going to shoot you. And that means you should be using law when it really matters. Things like loss of life or freedom or property or health or threat to any of those things. But we shouldn't be using law for things like, I don't like what you're doing or how you're acting or things of that sort.
So give us examples. So Larry, give us examples of that, of, you know, forcing yourself on somebody with specific examples of what we're doing wrong in the society.
There's so many of them. Let me give you one that affects New York State directly. The way we regulate hemp and cannabis. We should be regulating hemp and cannabis like onions. Why? If we do it like onions, we will help our small farmers in this state. Our small farmers would love to have another cash crop to sell and to grow and to create craft grows. We're not doing that. We're deciding that hemp and cannabis is bad because we don't like people doing it. That is exactly the wrong reason. It hurts our small farmers. Not just that. It hurts small businesses. Not just that. It doesn't let the youth come back to this state and do cool things and have craft grows and hempcrete and hemp plastic and hemp cloth and hemp rope. Not just that, it hurts the average New Yorker who has chronic pain, who now is getting stuck with either an opioid or not even that, and now they have to either take something that they get addicted to or have their family and friends go off and try to buy it, maybe go to jail. Why in the world would we let someone use a cannabis product and have a better life? We should do that for those people who have chronic pain. But not just that, those people who are addicted. There are people who are addicted to hard, horrible drugs that could use a cannabis product to get them off of those drugs. That can be done. So that's a good example that affects New Yorkers right now.
Governor Cuomo is for that.
No, he's not.
Okay, go ahead.
No, Governor Cuomo is about, let's make sure that we heavily regulate and heavily tax medical marijuana only so that his cronies can survive and do well, so big business wins and small farmers lose. I said like onions, with one exception, obviously. You need to be 18 years old to purchase it. I want a small farmer to be able to grow it. I don't want them to have to wait 4 years to get a license and hope that His Majesty King Andrew happens to be nice enough to give him a license. Then he has to pay $200,000 to get that license. No. If you want to grow, grow. I want to help small business, small farmers, not the big business.
So who are the cronies you were just referencing?
Do you think I know all of his cronies?
Well, no, but give us a description.
Yeah, every single person who has a bit license right now, every single person who has a license to grow hemp right now, and every person who can do a cannabis grow right now, those are his cronies.
What about the guys who are being arrested, you know, who've been convicted? The people around him, his closest aides, are those cronies?
Of course. That's what all the boards and all the authorities are for. Look, one of the other problems, which is different from what you mentioned earlier, but the idea of corruption. There are several ways to repair and make corruption a whole lot less in New York State. You can't get rid of corruption. Nobody can. But you absolutely can make it less, and you absolutely can catch it earlier. Here's the one thing you have to do. Get rid of all these unaccountable boards, authorities, corporations like For example, all of the regional economic development corporations, they should all go away. These things are literally just petri dishes for corruption. If you see all of those people that you just mentioned, all of those people who got arrested, indicted, convicted, almost every one of them is on a board or on an authority or on a committee or on one of those things. That's how he uses those things to reward his cronies and his party loyalists and those who give him money. You can just check it. This is common knowledge. He's raised over $800,000 from people that he's put on boards. So, of course, they're his cronies. It is obvious. It's screaming at you.
So why don't people seem to care? He's, you know, 2-1 in the polls. What's that all about?
Yeah, I'll tell you why. It's fear. There are two aspects of fear. Number one, fear. People are so afraid of the other, whoever the other is, in this case it's usually a Republican, that they'll vote for a Democrat. The next thing is we use fear tactics in all of our marketing, right, for our candidates. Every commercial is not, I'm going to help someone, but this guy is evil, that guy is bad, this guy is evil. We're always voting for less of two evils. Then what does that add up to? That adds up to people actually being so afraid or so disheartened that they don't even vote. 60-70% of New Yorkers don't even vote. We have given up. So when those people don't vote, of course His Majesty wins. Because the only people who do vote are those who are afraid of the Republican. They vote for the Democrat. The rest of the people just stay home.
So let me ask you a question, Larry Sharp. Do you think you could win?
Of course. Absolutely.
Over the years, I've interviewed all these people. The third-party guys always say, yeah, I'm going to win. And they never win. So why should we believe you?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I didn't say I'm going to win. It's not what I said. You said, can you win? And I said, yes. Let me explain why.
I get
why.
It. I see that. Go ahead.
There's a difference. I didn't promise you victory. They do. I didn't. I'm telling you I can win. Let me give you a couple of reasons why. Number one, all the guys in the past, the last three Libertarian candidates for governor, last three combined, did not raise $10,000. I've raised over $400,000. The last three gubernatorial candidates, Libertarian line, combined, didn't make as many stops as I make in 1 month. I make over 30 stops every single month. This is not your father's Libertarian campaign. This is not your father's Libertarian party. This is a different Libertarian party. That's number one. But that's not enough. The second thing is, you look now at the situation. This is a five-way race. In a five-way race, 30-35% could actually win this thing. That's a realistic number to win. That's also not always true. But let me go to numbers. The last poll we put out, I'm at about 33% name recognition. This, by the way, is my biggest hurdle to victory, is name recognition. When people know who I am, they tend to vote for me. At 33% name recognition, I'm still polling at 13%. So the math is as follows. If you triple 33% to get to 100% name recognition, that makes me triple 13, which goes to 39% in the polls, which means I can win. So what does that mean? My hurdle, my Mount Everest, is name recognition. If people get to know who I am by November 6th, that's how I'll win. If they don't, I'm going to struggle. That's how it works.
Okay, so let me ask you a question so people get to know you a little bit. Who are your contemporary political heroes? Is it Rand Paul, self-described libertarian, or do you have any heroes?
None. My heroes tend to be more business people in general, but most of my heroes, believe it or not, are my actual activists every day who are out there trying to make things happen. The people who are actually sitting there saying, I'm going to volunteer my time, my energy, and my money to try to make a change in this state. These people are actual heroes. The people who've been running our state for the past 16 years, they're shameful. 16 years the Democrat Party has run this state, and if they were going to fix this state, they would have fixed it. The Republicans have watched this state be destroyed for 16 years. 16 years, the last 8 years of this, over 1 million people have voted with their feet and left. The Republicans have watched this, and what have they done? Nothing. What's their plan? Zero. Where's their movement? Nowhere. I've been doing this for 1 year. I have a movement and a plan for almost everything. These are the real heroes, the people who are helping me do this.
Oh, come on, Larry. You mean to say you can't give me one little hero, one person like, you know, anybody in the Libertarian Party, Rand Paul?
Rand Paul's not a Libertarian. Rand Paul's a Republican. So just be clear on that. Lots of Republicans call themselves Libertarians, but they're Republicans. He's a Republican, not a Libertarian. You want me to give you a hero? Yeah. Gary Johnson, the man who stood up twice to try to stand up for this party and lost both times, but is still going strong. That's my hero. A good man. A man who cares about people, a man who knows how to do the right thing. That's my hero.
And remind us who he is again.
Did you just say that?
Yeah, I said it. Because, you know, there are a lot of people out there who have no idea who he is.
President 2016.
Yeah, and?
That's who he is.
And you think if we took a poll, more than 10% would know who he is?
Did you ask me for someone famous, or did you ask me for a hero?
No,
I
you
gave
said,
you a hero.
No. You said, you really said that? I was explaining to you why I said it, because I wanted your hero to be introduced to everybody so they would know who he was.
I love it. Please Google Gary Johnson. That'd be amazing.
Okay. That sounds a little condescending, but that's okay. You can do that if you like. So now, your website, you have policy issues listed. One of them,
I do.
One of them, and first on the list that I saw, was education. Tell us what your libertarian approach to education would be.
Yes, this is a great one. A total reboot of the education system. Right now, we're dropping $22,000 per person per year, per kid, I should say, per year in this state. 10,000 more than the average, and we're at best ranked 37th in the entire nation. We also have massive teacher burnout, and then we have trouble even finding good teachers. We have a lot of problems in our situation right now. And low graduation rates, nothing but bad. So here's the answer. Number one, this is a large answer, but I'll give you the whole thing. The first thing is end standardized testing until high school. Standardized testing before high school just makes, it's an unfair way of grading teachers. It's an unfair way of rewarding schools. It makes kids who are 10, 11, 12 years old feel stupid if they can't test well. It makes a second class of student in elementary school. It's a terrible idea, and it's no indication of success at that age. That should go away. If that goes away, several things will happen. Number one, we'll lose Common Core. Good. Don't care if it goes away. Let teachers decide if it makes sense or not. That's not my choice. That should be a teacher's choice to use that tool or not. Second, we'll lose federal funding. We'll lose about $4 billion out of the budget. There's about $60 billion total in education budget, and about $4 billion of that comes from the federal government. We will lose that. Keep that number in your head, please, because I'm going to say how we deal with that in a second. There's something else that we lose that when we lose that $4 billion. We lose all those strings attached, which is amazing, which means we can start getting rid of some administrators. The average teacher in New York State makes about $80,000 as an average. The average administrator makes over $150,000. If we could get rid of two or three administrators in any given district, we can easily get teachers raises or hire more teachers or get more computers or whatever's required in that district. It will provide a surplus in that district just at getting rid of administrators. In addition, if you ask most teachers why they leave, it's admin. That's the regulation. That's why they leave. They get burned out. We actually have school districts now that have more administrators than teachers in them. That's shameful. We should not have that. But I'm still not done. Not just that. We actually have K through 12. We should not have K through 12. It should be K through 10. The last 2 years of high school for far too many kids is gym and study hall and playing video games and smoking weed. That is not the right answer. The kids are lost. They aren't doing well. How do we know that? Because if you go to the first year of college for too many college students, it has to become 13th grade. Why? Because they're not ready for college. Now, of course, what also happens? Now it takes them at least 6 years to graduate college. That's the norm now, at least 6 years, if not more, if they even graduate. We have very low college graduation rates also. So I got a 24-year-old kid who's never had a job, and he has no work ethic, and we wonder why. Or worse, I got a 24-year-old kid who's $100,000 in debt, has a degree that doesn't have any real value, and now he has to work at Starbucks. Lose, lose, lose. Now, I know you'll say, but Larry, we have BOCES. We do have BOCES. The problem with that is the image is horrible. People say things like, you're better than BOCES, or BOCES is for the dumb kids, or BOCES is for the bad kids. Terrible that we say that. It's completely wrong, and we should be supporting schools like the BOCES programs and all our trades. We desperately need tradesmen in this state. The average tradesman in New York State is over 50. That's bad. I love my 50-year-olds. I'm 50. But we need more people to be in the trades. We need the average to be 30, 35. Now we're rocking and rolling. We should change that. How do we change that? Once the kid is 16, he or she takes a test. They pass a test. They get a high school diploma. Then they have five options. Option number one, you think college is the right answer for you? Awesome. Go to a prep school. Go to prep school so you're ready for that college, whether that's history or biology or liberal arts or whatever it is. Go off, do that. When you then head to that college, you are ready to rock and roll. Maybe you graduate in 3 years, take advantage of incubators, take advantage of internships. You get a good college experience, a fast college experience. You're ready to rock and roll. But let's say you're not that kid. You're so super smart that you'd be bored in that. You'd be totally bored. No worries. Take your SATs now. Get an associate's degree. You're that smart kid. Don't be bored. Go do it. Awesome. You're going to be a scientist anyway. Good luck. Let's say you don't want any of those things. No worries. Instead, go to a trade school. 2-year trade school, become a plumber, a technician, HVAC guy, mechanic, whatever you want to do, all good. 2 years of that, depending upon what you do, you either have a license at 18 or you're ready for an apprenticeship. Whatever the case may be, go off and do that and be happy. You don't like that? Great. Go get a job. Go work. Go get a job. Go work. Get a work ethic. Learn that when your boss says show up at 8, you show up at 8, not at 9:30. You understand that actually means 7:45. Get that work ethic. I don't know how many people tell me all the time, Larry, I would hire anybody with a work ethic. Last, start a business. They might say, wait a minute, Larry, they're 16. Are you kidding me? No, I'm dead serious. We have a whole situation right now where if you ask 20-year-olds if they feel like adults, over half will tell you no. That's bad. I can't change parenting, but I can change the environment. I want us to be making those mistakes at 16, not 26. And right now, we got a lot of 26-year-olds coming back home to mom or dad making mistakes. Let's make those mistakes at 16, learn our lessons, get better. By the time we're 26, we can rock and roll. The next question I get is, how do you pay for it? No worries. I was a Marine. When I got a Marine Corps, I got the GI Bill. The GI Bill gave me a certain amount of money, and there's some amount of years to spend it. We do the same thing with our 16-year-olds. They get $20,000. They can use it, and we'll send it off to any school they want. They have 7 years to use it. $20,000, 7 years. When that happens, here's what I promise you. Number one, there'll be a bunch of prep schools that will pop up. And guess how much they'll cost for 2 years? $20,000. There'll be a bunch of trade schools that'll pop up, and they'll cost $20,000. How do I know that? Because it's guaranteed money from the government, and banks love that. They will give loans. This will pop up. This will happen everywhere. So now what am I saying? I'm saying for those 10th and 11th graders now, instead of paying $22,000 per year, we're paying $10,000 per year. We're saving $12,000 per kid. But not just that. There's about 400,000 11th and 12th graders. Do the math. That's over $4 billion, which means we save, we make up that federal funds right away, still have no strings attached, allow teachers to teach, get rid of a bunch of administrators, have better results for kids, happier parents, happier teachers.
No, I want to ask you a question. Wait. I want to ask you a question, Larry Sharp. There are those people who think that our educational system is still, after all these years, segregated. You know, that black kids get less than white kids do. What do you do about that?
Yep, absolutely, 100%. The first thing is, if you notice my whole plan up in the 11th and 12th grade, you can go to the school you want to go to. So kids will pick schools. So you'll find that kids will begin to integrate naturally. That will tend to happen if you can pick the school you want to go to. Now, will it be perfectly integrated? Of course not. We're never going to have 50-50. That's not going to happen. But will it integrate better? Yes, you will have better integration if the parents can pick any school, the kids can pick any school, and it's based upon dollars that everybody gets. So you will have naturally more integration at 11th and 12th grade. That part is built in. Now, before 11th and 12th grade, yeah, this is a big deal. Most of this goes to how we reward schools and how we create charter schools, things of that sort. I want to change how we actually even pay for the schools. First things first. Right now, as I said, we're paying about $22,000 per kid. I would like to pay a whole lot less, and I think we can if we go through the ideas that I talked about. I would like the state to pay straight. The state has to pay, by our Constitution, for grades 1 through 12. That's required, and I get that, and we'll do that. But I don't want it to be paid at all by the local communities. I don't want any school tax at the local level. Now, that sounds crazy, I know. But if we start to do that and everything comes instead from the state will pay a flat fee to all school districts, a flat fee to all school districts. You have X amount of kids. Multiply that by a number. I'm unsure what that number is exactly yet. My gut tells me about 15K, but I'm not sure yet. Here's your check. Good luck. No more grant writing. No more begging money from the state. No more begging money from the federal government. Here is your money. Good luck. The number of kids you have, there
but,
you go.
Yeah, I got it. But what if the administrators in that district are, you know, for want of a better word, you know, jerks, and decide, okay, that there's one group we favor, one group we don't favor. So they spend money on the favorable group, and you say, well, spend it any way you want.
Absolutely. Here's the issue. The only thing I require is transparency. That is my only issue. You must be transparent. Any bad behavior, whether that is racial or gender or sexual orientation or religious, any of that, whatever that might happen, I will shine a light on. I will let everyone know what is happening.
Okay, okay. Stop right there. Behavior. Stop right there. But what if you got a place like Curious Joel, and, you know, you got a group of people who get themselves elected, and they want the religious kids to be treated in a different way and don't want to hold them to the same standards. That's okay?
I didn't say it was okay. What I literally said was, any bad behavior, I will shine a light on.
Okay, so there is a light being shined on those guys.
Absolutely.
I read about it all the time, but it hasn't changed their bad behavior.
No, there isn't a shine. First, there isn't a shine, a light shine on them from the government, from the governor. That's number one. And that's the first thing. And they still are able to do whatever they want because the average person, so to say, doesn't know. The local people know, but the local people aren't enough. The whole state should know. Someone's going to shine a light on that behavior. Someone's going to come on TV like I will and say, look at what's happening in this community. You start shining a light on that and you will see action being taken.
Yeah, but those guys, they want, but Larry, they want the vote. They want the votes. Andrew Cuomo wants the votes, so you don't hear too much from Andrew Cuomo about it. The local assembly,
I don't care about those votes. Yes, you're correct. He does. That's not me. I actually have morals and ethics. I care about that. I'm not him.
Okay,
so I will shine a light on it. I'm telling you right now, on the radio, I'm telling you, I will shine a light on all of those.
Okay. Hey, Larry, remember, we got something. 3 minutes left. I got to ask you real quickly. This is a real lightning round. Healthcare.
Healthcare and health insurance are not the same thing. This is our biggest problem. We've confused them. And we worry about fixing healthcare insurance when we should be worried about fixing healthcare. We have to fix healthcare first. The biggest piece is transparency, is making it no longer a cartel system. Make it no longer so hard to put people in the actual field itself. We fix healthcare first, then we can fix healthcare insurance.
Okay, the MTA.
MTA is an absolute disaster and embarrassment. $16 billion, and of that, about $6 billion comes straight from New York State, goes right to them because they're bad. Have to fix it three ways. Way number one, we have to start using our infrastructure, raising money through that, through marketing and leasing out naming rights. Naming rights to bridges and tunnels that will raise billions of dollars to help support the actual MTA. Second, we have to use the lines right now at night that aren't being used, the rail lines going in and out of the city, as freight lines. We use those freight lines to raise money, both for marketing purposes and for bringing freight into the city. Less wear and tear on the city, less wear and tear on the infrastructure, more money coming in. Next, the MTA as a board has to completely change because no one is accountable. The board has to go away with people and put people on it who are accountable to the local people. In addition, we have to copy all of the good ways that people are doing this in other large cities in the world. Those big cities like Berlin and London, and copy the ideas that are working because the MTA is so inefficient. To fix 1 mile of track, they are four times more expensive than other cities in this world that both have unions and have safety. We copy that. We will both save money and raise money through ways other than more taxes. We'll make it more efficient.
Okay, tax reform.
Biggest thing in tax reform is getting rid of unfunded mandates. Unfunded mandates at the county level are crushing local counties. No one's even talking about that. If you start getting rid of unfunded mandates, you will find counties will have less desire to raise property taxes. And with property taxes, we have a problem with that, too. Property taxes right now are not voted on by the actual people in the town. They're voted on by the legislators, which means they can go behind closed doors and raise property taxes.
Okay, wait. Hold on, because we're running out of time here. Really seriously, what examples can you give?
Just tax reform.
Yes.
I'm giving you tax reform. Sorry.
Okay, fair enough. Which examples can you give us, unfunded mandates, that you would do away with?
I would do away with none of them. I would not do away with them. What I would say is they're not required. Let the counties decide what they want to deal with. I would let counties start their budgets at zero. That's what I would do. Okay. I don't have to know all these things. That's the point. My entire campaign is about decentralization. But here's what I know from business, from family, from life. If you have personal freedom plus accountability plus transparency, you will have innovation. Right now, our state is in a death spiral with over 100,000 people leaving every year and a rise of suicides throughout all different parts of our state. So that has to change, which means we need innovation. I'm going to foster innovation. That's what I'm trying to achieve.
It's always great to have somebody who speaks a little bit of a different language than others. And Larry Sharp is the Libertarian gubernatorial candidate against Andrew Cuomo and a myriad of other people. Larry, we wish you well, and we hope that you'll come back and talk to us in the future.
Thank you for having me. It's LarrySharp.com, and that's Larry Sharp with an E, and the E stands for electable.
Or enough.
I like that, too.
Great to talk to you, Larry. Thanks so much.
Have a good one.
The Capital Connection is distributed with the cooperation of the public radio stations of New York State. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection, a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio in Albany. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.